Welcome to Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. Each week, we explore down and dirty ways to stop awfulizing, catastrophizing, going down the rabbit hole, and moving through all the craziness that is happening right now. We're here to create a community of like-minded people as we give you tips, tricks, and techniques for keeping sane in an unhinged world. And now, here are your hosts, Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg.
Hey, everybody. This is Scott Grossberg, one of your co-hosts for the podcast, Keeping Your Shit Together in a Stressed World. And I'm here with my co-host, Michelle Post. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Scott. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
Happy Martin Luther King's Day for those of us in the U.S.
Absolutely. In fact, I wanted to start off by talking about MLK Day today. This is a good reminder for any of you, wherever you are in the world, to think about civil rights and maybe challenging yourself to grow in awareness around whatever privileges are true for you, you know, depending on your gender. If you're male, you have male privilege. If you're Caucasian, you have white privilege. If you have a lot of income, then you probably have financial privileges. You just may have privileges that other people don't. And whenever possible, can you leverage your privilege for good, not evil, right? Like a Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. So I am using my white privilege right now to encourage maybe thinking about reading a book. There's a wonderful book called My Grandmother's Hands by Resma Menakem. I'm probably pronouncing Resma's name wrong, but My Grandmother's Hands is a great book if you've never read it. And White Fragility, why the subtitle is Why Is It So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism by Robin DiAngelo, or Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson, which is about wrongfully imprisoned people of color who have been plea bargained out of fear and lack of representation to take a guilty plea. And then Brian Stevenson's work to try to support them with legal representation. So those are three books I just thought I would, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King was all about trying to create equality and to abolish issues around lack of civil rights among difference. And I just thought I would take my time today to encourage you to do some of that expansion, that personal expansion.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you talk about Martin Luther King, certainly a great man, and his dream of racial equality. I happen to have just been reading some things. I don't even believe it's a firsthand account, but the at least purported deep depression that Martin Luther King experienced, and how that, again, purportedly from what I was reading, gave rise to the I Have a Dream speech that he wound up giving.
Oh, I love that speech. Yes.
Towards the very end, and how it tied in, right? When he talks about being free, free at last, there's actually a backstory to that speech. You know, the other thing, and I'm not going to rain on anybody's parade, but as an attorney, you know, when I hear about privileges and immunities and rights and stuff, my approach is a little different.
I'm sure.
because it, you know, here in the U.S., it comes from constitutional, the 13th and 14th Amendment. And part of my frustration and challenge, because for so many years I dealt with allegations of inequality and prejudice and et cetera, only to find there's a massive misunderstanding and sometimes intentional spinning of rights and privileges.
Yeah.
I will make it as simple as, here in the U.S., driving your car on the road is not a right. Right. We take it for
it's a
granted,
privilege, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And when there are privileges, there are rules attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when you violate those, your privilege to drive can be taken away.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the right to run into it. That, you know, the standard, you don't have the right we have freedom of speech, but you don't have the right to run into a crowded theater and yell fire.
Right.
And create panic. And so I believe Dr. Martin Luther King, very studied, well-informed, unfortunately very street-smart individual, would be the first to tell people, pick your battles.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? You're not going to fight everything. And to bear in mind that I happen to be a big fan of, we've never talked about this, of judicial reform, because I think the system is broken. And it's very interesting to me, having been on the inside, both as a judge pro tem, as a court-appointed officer for the court handling resolutions, and as an advocate for my clients, it's very interesting to look at it on the inside, because then you watch how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
And you realize that this isn't about fair play
right.
and justice. It's about the rules of legality. And so nice things to reflect on today, mm-hmm. on Martin Luther King's Day, because he was certainly the subject of a lot of oppression.
Yeah.
And we've talked about a lot of the rise in everything from racism to anti-Semitism to whatever ism you want to put on it, mm-hmm. since October 7th. And it's, you know, it's spiraling. And we're moving into the Iowa caucuses tonight, and I'm not going to make this political, but some of the stuff I've been hearing, I'm just going to call it stuff. I'm not even going to call it rhetoric anymore. Just some of the stuff I've been hearing is it tiptoes around the rights and privileges that we've all been talking about here for the last few minutes. And I really ask everybody, figure out what you stand for, figure out what you stand against. Usually what you stand against is more important than what you stand for at times.
Mm-hmm.
And just take a step back after you do that and figure out what's true and then what's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, and I have been around some people in various stuff, we'll just call it civil rights in general. In various civil rights sectors. And some of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, I think, would turn some people's stomachs.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The hangers-on, not the leaders. The leaders mm-hmm. actually have the vision. They have some mm-hmm. of the people with their own little agendas on the inside. And it's like, really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, Scott, you know, I'm hesitant to give you this recommendation, because I know as a former trial attorney, you know, when you see injustice, you like blood, you know, you go for it. But the most incensed I have ever been about a group of people, just average citizens at this time of the UK, versus large governmental kind of cover up-y stuff. So if there's a part of you that sort of likes a good conspiracy theory or a good David versus Goliath thing.
Michelle has never seen a conspiracy she doesn't love.
Oh, yes, I have. It's called Flat Earth. The Holocaust deniers. There's a lot of conspiracies I absolutely do not love. But this was based on a true story. It was actually the UK Post Office versus Mr. Bates. And there is both a documentary about the true story and a series on played by Toby Jones as the main character, Mr. Bates, versus a software called Horizon that ended up being to blame for a lot of people losing their livelihood, their investments, their savings. Really good. Didn't happen that long ago. I mean, started 2008, but resolved around 2019 or 20. So it's really recent. And
That's not even a good conspiracy. And it wasn't a
conspiracy.
Right. It's a true story. And I've had a number of people, friends of mine in the UK, tell me about this.
Have you?
Okay. And so
so good. So good. Brian and I were riveted.
It never fails to stun me the level of we'll just call it injustice. I hate the term unfairness, because I keep hearkening back to the movie Labyrinth with David Bowie and you know, the young actress in there. Her name escapes me, Jennifer somebody. But, you know, she's constantly saying, that's not fair, that's not fair, that's not fair. And and David Bowie, the Jared character, says, you keep using that word. I wonder what your basis of comparison is.
Mm-hmm. So true.
And so when we say things like that, you know, I hesitate with unfair, because the context and the basis of comparison is actually so different for both sides. Mm-hmm. Very rarely do I sense, there are exceptions, but very rarely do evil people think they're evil.
Right. Right? Oh, yeah. In this case, one of the evil people is like a leader in her church.
Oh, yeah. And so they can justify it. And I mean, hell, the Nazis went to church.
Exactly.
And so that said.
So does the KKK.
That said, again, I go back to if we become rule based instead of fairness focused. You start putting people to the test, and some of the, we'll call them again, injustices, wouldn't be carried away. However, they're just, when people get into power and they get a lot of yes people behind them, or they think they can hide behind their cloaks of immunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got federal judges that they're in for life, right? Our state judges, they have to be elected.
Yep.
But federal judges, they do whatever the hell they want. And I will tell you firsthand, some of them are petty tyrants.
Wow.
They're horrible people. They are horrible people.
So sad.
And they are political appointments. And so it doesn't – I'm saddened but not shocked when I hear about miscarriages of justice that happen.
Right? I know.
Because I know mechanically how they happened. Right. If you go back and you trace MLK's history, there are mechanical factors in place that led to all these different things. And by the way, the same thing goes for JFK and Robert Kennedy. You know, the three of them were all shot within a short period of time.
Right.
It's a great day for people to reflect on rights versus privileges, and they are two different things. You have fewer rights than you think. Your privileges are not rights. Your privileges are things that you enjoy, but you don't have the right to them, at least here in the U.S. under the 13th and 14th Amendment. And again, you hear some of these great things, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yeah. It's not that you get to be happy. It's that you get to pursue it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good food for thought, right? Like, you know, our podcast is about keeping your shit together in a stressed world. And boy, you know, when you see injustice, when you see the isms showing up in your life, it's really hard to keep your shit together if you have an ethical core, if you have a center, if you have a, you know, a true north kind of thing. And it's hard to pick which battle you're going to do, but this is the perfect day, the perfect time to take a pause. And if you made goals for 2024, did you make one that had anything to do with justice, with civil rights, with leveraging whatever privilege you have to help people who do not have that privilege? I would like to encourage our community, who I adore, to stand up for some of those things in whatever way that looks like for you.
And now that Michelle has put a call to action out, let's talk about doing nothing.
Oh, yeah. Wait, but first, we'll give you a day where you get to do nothing.
Actually, it's a very good tie-in, because I do believe that a lot, and I know not all of our listeners are A-type personalities, and we've talked about this on the show before. I think it's important, though, that, you know, here you've put out this wonderful little call to action. And yes, there are people who are vocal, and we've got the Iowa caucuses tonight, et cetera, et cetera. And just as a quick recap, to do nothing becomes a real challenge for those people who are results oriented and achievement oriented and competitive and fast paced and shall I dare say, impatient, right? So let's just start with that. And, you know, when Michelle talks about the injustices, right, and you can get worked up and you become impatient for an outcome, that's not always the healthiest thing for you. And I think that you would agree mm-hmm. with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go back to a fundamental Buddhist teaching that I learned, and that's that suffering comes from attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And when we hear this concept of non-attachment, right, you can get all worked up and stand. Scott has said it, stand for something, stand against something, but stand, right, if you stand for nothing, like we're asking you to do today, you know, what the hell happens?
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you firsthand, and Michelle and I chatted about this before we put the show on live today, because I don't believe doing nothing is possible. So it goes back to the old Batman quote, nothing is impossible. And we'll talk about some of this, but letting go is possible. And so I want to be very careful, because, you know, when we talk about doing nothing, this whole show arose out of us joking about Seinfeld.
Yep, it did. And
TV show, right? And it's a show about nothing. That's what it's always been called, a show about nothing.
Right.
And in fact, there was even that episode on Seinfeld where the two of them pitched a show about nothing as a kind of sarcastic approach to their own show. There's a great example, right? People will watch shows like Seinfeld as a release, as a relief, as a letting go. Watching a show about nothing is the closest you're going to get to doing nothing, in my opinion. And so, you know, the other thing that I have found is that when you do nothing, and we'll talk about, at least I'll talk about a particular technique here in a moment, it's almost, you're still doing things, right? I don't know anybody, by the way, who can sit down in meditation and think of nothing. I don't think that, nobody does that. The human mind is not wired like that.
Right, right.
Well, I don't even think it's great that you bring up the Buddhist monks, right? Uh-huh. They sit down and focus on their breath. They sit down and focus on a mantra. What they're not doing is ruminating over the world.
Yeah.
So it's almost,
they're still doing something.
It's a pattern interrupt, for lack of a better way to put it. Every day we go through and I love this one little article I found, the importance of doing nothing, and no, you're not too busy to do it. you know, I've joked before. One of the worst things I can imagine is, pardon me, being on a deserted island, no electricity, no electronics. And I am forced to be on this deserted, beautiful island doing nothing.
That would be your worst nightmare.
It was like, you want me to what? And I know darn well there are multitudes of people that are saying, take me now.
Yeah, take me now. Uh-huh.
Take me now. I'll go talk to a coconut. It's okay.
Yeah, Wilson.
Yeah.
Named Wilson.
And a volleyball, yeah. So you know, the bottom line is, I'm asking just at the threshold question, have you ever considered what your current lifestyle is doing to you mentally, physically, emotionally? Mm. You know, you get to the, I'm just again reading a book, you get to the point where, you know, burnout is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can see a broken bone, you can hear a physical cold or a cough, mm-hmm. but your mental health, we tend to blow off. I think you know this very well, Michelle.
Yes, I do. It really irritates me.
And when you have these multitude of little injuries that take mm-hmm. place.
Death by a thousand paper cuts.
Over a time, yeah, you take, mm-hmm. you have these thousand injuries that take place over a period of time, it starts taking a toll.
Yeah,
and you're fatigued and burned out. And depressed, and what you think of as multitasking is actually irresponsible.
Right.
because you can't do it. And so when I talk about doing nothing, it's actually just taking a step back. And in a minute, I'll talk about a little technique, I believe it's out of Denmark, that lets you still do things, but without purpose.
Just to explore, see what happens kind of thing.
I mean,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah. What happens, by the way, in your practice, right? Don't you ever see couples or individuals, you come in and you go, we just need to restart.
Stop. Oh, of course. Of course. I mean, of course, sometimes I just say, okay, pause, take a breath, re-regulate. Sometimes clients will come in, they've been having such a good experience that they'll want to celebrate and share. And then they're like, oh, you know, I know we didn't do any work today. And I reinforce for them, it's important to have moments when the thing that you do is celebrate, right? It's not a nothing, but it's not the hard work of therapy, but sometimes it is. Like it's hard for some people to take a compliment. It's hard for some people to say that they deserve any kind of reward. So even just celebrating successes can be an important therapeutic process, right? Say thank you when somebody compliments you instead of dismissing it, right? So yeah, there are times in therapy where either I'll slow someone down that's dysregulated and just stop them, or we'll stop the hard work of therapy to do the maybe not so hard work for some of celebrating successes and progress.
Yeah. So sure. I can tell you that my restarts, before we get into this technique from the Netherlands, you know, some of my restart tools are things that involve, by the way, lots of muscle memory.
Oh, yeah.
So that I'm not consciously thinking about it. We've talked before. I have fidget spinners everywhere, for example.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's a physical distraction.
Uh-huh.
That lets my brain,
yeah,
do nothing. Or sometimes at night, any of you that don't sleep well at night, part of the challenge of you going back to sleep is you have an overactive imagination.
Right.
One of my little keys is I have a good old-fashioned, honest to God, old-fashioned is not my phone. I have an old-fashioned iPod, the originals.
Oh, the original iPod.
That's just a frickin' iPod. Uh-uh. And we're not talking about the ones that were iPhones without the phone.
No, we're
talking, it's a frickin' dial, old thing. It does nothing but it does
play
what
music.
It's supposed to do.
Only
it
play music.
It plays music.
I remember those. I'm old.
And I have particular songs on there that I can use at night. I can go sit in my little rocking chair. I can put this headset on and do nothing.
Ah,
right. So it kind of it kind of like bypasses the earworms that otherwise are going on in your head.
I when we were preparing for this, you know, Scott, I said to you, so what do we do? You know, since January 16th in the U.S. is National Do Nothing Day. So what do we do on this podcast? Like, do we actually sit? And should we fool people and like sit and record 45 minutes of silence?
Of nothing. Yeah.
We do is press the record button. But even this morning, you know, it's a holiday day for most people. But when you're a solopreneur, you know, like I've already seen clients today and I have more later. So it's sometimes a good time to see my clients who have a workday schedule. But I was sitting there and I was thinking like, I need a do nothing day. Like I just need a day where I don't do anything, you know, like, and I was thinking about it and trying to figure out on my schedule, you know, when I could do it. And I think I'm going to book one, a day where I just free to explore, no particular objective. I think I'm going to schedule one this coming weekend.
Well, I do a lot of walking, a lot of my walking meditation. Mm-hmm. Again, it's I'm doing something.
You're walking, uh-huh.
But
and meditating.
Uh-huh. But it's not with purpose, for lack of a better way.
Okay.
I need to put one foot in front of another. Let's get real here. I got to put one foot in front of another. I got to keep moving forward. I know where I want to end up. I know the route I'm going to take. I'm doing something, but I'm not actively pursuing anything than walking for the sake of walking. Mm-hmm. Here's the fun part for those of you listening. If you've never tried to do things that engage the muscle memory part mm-hmm. of you, right? Mm-hmm. I know how to walk. I know the direction I'm going. I don't think about the route anymore. If I go back to as simple as the fidget spinner, it frees your mind up and you actually become more creative than forcing it.
Yeah.
I've had some of my best thoughts, in my own humble opinion, come to me while I'm doing nothing. How many of you have been in the shower or taking a bath, right?
Showering.
And suddenly, boom,
this
thing hits you.
Oh, for sure.
Uh-huh. And so there's a valid part of having these moments of relaxation and uh-huh. to relax for the sake of relaxing.
Yeah. Could I add, I want to add a little ethical twist here for healthcare workers, because as I was thinking about this show, I was thinking about an ethical component that anybody in healthcare or mental health care abide by, which is non-maleficence. That if we do nothing but do no harm, right? Do no harm. It's important to do that. So what does that look like in healthcare? Well, Brian was telling me sometimes in the ICU, they get people on all these different meds, because you take a med and then you take another med to treat the side effects of that med. Sometimes what you have to do is do nothing. You have to take everybody off all their meds and start fresh. And then you realize that the medication combinations themselves were causing the harm. So there can be real health in doing no harm. And in the therapeutic stance, we have when we're concerned that what we might do as an intervention could cause people harm, we go back to the component of just listen, just be present for this person, just create safe space. And there's a lot of, like Thich Nhat Hanh said, there's a lot of doing in just listening to your friends, just listening to your family members, just listening to your clients. There's a wonderful poem that I used to teach could I read it? There's a wonderful poem that I used to teach volunteers on like a hotline or a grief support group. And the poem is called Listen. It's old. It's from David Bailey and Sharon Dreyer's book called The Care of the Mentally Ill, dating back to 1977. Okay. And it's
advice. Did you just call that old?
1977.
Great. Thank you.
The poem is old. I've got a lot of newer stuff now, but okay. So check this out. When I ask you to listen to me and you start giving advice, you have not done what I've asked. When I ask you to listen to me and you begin to tell me why I shouldn't feel that way, you are trampling on my feelings. When I ask you to listen to me and you feel you have to do something to solve my problem, you've failed me, strange as that may seem. Listen. All I ask was that you listen, not talk or do, just hear me. And this is how you can tell it's older. Advice is cheap. 10 cents will get you both Dear Abby and Billy Graham in the same newspaper, 10 cents newspaper. And I can do for myself. I am not helpless, maybe discouraged and faltering, but not helpless. When you do something for me that I can and need to do for myself, you contribute to my fear and my weakness. But when you accept as a simple fact that I do feel what I feel, no matter how irrational, then I can quit trying to convince you and I can get about the business of understanding what's behind my irrational feelings. And when that is clear, the answers are obvious. I don't need advice. Irrational feelings make sense when we understand what's behind them. And perhaps that's why prayer works sometimes for some people, because God is mute and doesn't give advice or try to fix things. He just listens and let you work it out for yourself. So please just listen, just hear me. And if you want to talk, wait a minute for your turn and I will listen to you.
That's beautiful.
Isn't that amazing?
Right.
Power of listening.
And I hear that, by the way, and I constantly am reminded as you went through that of the talking stick.
Yes. The Native American tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think this is a good transition period because, you know, it's great that you and I are talking about all these things, but there are actually concepts that have been embraced worldwide. And the one that I found, I know it's going to sound like I'm saying Nixon like the president, but it's not. It's Nixon, N-I-K-S-E-N.
Oh. Uh-huh.
And I believe I'm pronouncing it correctly. It does come out of the Netherlands. And it is the concept of just hanging or out, just doing nothing, with the concept of being without purpose. And one of the techniques that I discovered myself is there's actually something to sitting in a chair and looking out the window and doing nothing.
Yes.
You're still sitting there, right?
Yes.
You can focus on your breath. You can, they happen to call it, I've called it, muscle memory stuff where you play with a fidget spinner, and they happen to have called it semi-automatic activity.
Okay.
And they liken it to knitting, by the way, where you sit there and you're.
Oh, knitting.
You know, the knitting circles.
Doodling.
The doodling,
knitting,
right?
Circles, doodling.
And the fun part of this Nixon technique is, as they will tell you, there's not a one size fits all to any of it. And you can look up, there are various sites about this, just like there was with, and I always mispronounce it, H-Y-G-G-E, Hoogie?
Oh, yeah, Hoogie or Hoogie.
Hoogie, whatever. I always mess it up.
The Swedish concept.
And so it is a way for you to ease back into your own life. And the interesting thing is that at least the experts in Nixon that I have found readily admit that doing nothing is just not as simple as it sounds.
No, because your heart's still beating, your chest, you're still breathing, your body's still moving.
Because
you're thinking.
We at least in the West have been trained to be active, right? Otherwise, you're lazy.
Yeah.
You're weird. You're unproductive. You're not successful. Here's the challenge that I think that happens with doing nothing intentionally. And that is you fall into the rumination challenge. And I think most people are unhappy or not as happy as they want otherwise to be because of ruminations.
Yeah.
And this is why for me, having this semi-automatic activity helps eliminate the rumination part of it. You're not really doing entirely nothing. I'm still, I'm walking, right? Or I'm a big fan of the Wim Hof breathing techniques. Exercise. You know, the exercise is a great way to relax and do nothing. Because you're not, there's no, you go to the gym. Yes, there's this things to do. But if you work out a lot, you go on automatic pilot.
Right.
Today's my arm day. Then there's my leg day. Then there's the mixture day. Then there's this. Then there's that. And to the extent that you can go to semi-automatic instead of constantly trying to control the world around you, then you get relaxation.
Yes.
Or to put it another way, active passivity.
Active passivity. Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Okay.
And this then led me, by the way, to wondering, and this may not even be a thing, but have you ever, having now heard your poem, the listen poem, have you ever had a session with a client? Because I think most sessions run, what, about 50 minutes?
I'm a 60-minute-er person, but yes. Okay. Most therapists are 50 minutes.
So a session. Have you ever had a session and you do nothing in it with a client? You just sit there and do nothing?
How do I say this politely? I have definitely had sessions where I'm only active listening. I'm attuned with the client because I feel they need that gentle space. I like those sessions because it's important for people that are constantly interrupted and, you know, to have that kind of attention and attunement. There have been other times where I've had sessions with maybe a client that's not the best fit, and they do like to ruminate session after session after session after session, and they don't really apply any interventions, and they're not ready for any kind of change. And sometimes, particularly when they start to spew thoughts and philosophies and values that are not mine, that could be, it could be really challenging. But my only thing that I've done is sat there and listened and done only listening and just modulate my feelings and modulate my reactivity. Yeah.
So again, not quite what I was thinking of here, because right, you're now actively restricting yourself.
Uh-huh.
So there's not passive listening. You're actively involved in it. And the client is certainly activated.
The client's activated, yes. And
the reason the reason I say this is because we've talked about this many times on the show. Uh-huh. And I wonder, I don't know that I've ever done this myself. While I talked to clients about it sporadically, it's never been a whole session devoted to losing control.
Oh, I have clients that, what do you mean? Where they're working on wanting to lose control.
No, they're active. Now they're actively doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying, have you ever sat with someone and looked out the window?
Me in a set.
Yeah, it's right. We don't think about.
I've had business meetings like that.
Yeah, well, that's
but
all.
No, I mean, maybe.
That's called daydreaming.
Yeah, I've done that during businesses, but I have such high ethics when somebody is paying me out of their pocket for my time. I don't tune out. I'm super present. It's why I'm tired after sessions, because I am so actively listening. Yeah,
exactly. So I'm just wondering, maybe wouldn't it be kind of interesting to just letting your thoughts occur, and that the therapist, again, I don't know that a session like this even exists. Mm-hmm. We certainly let that happen. At least I let that happen. If I'm involved in any guided visualization, I'm the one that's active, but the client is passive.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Versus what I think is a therapy session where the client comes in active. Mm-hmm. And in your case, you remain passive, even though subsurface you're active. It is working with the clients on this whole stress relief concept of surrender.
Yeah, surrender. When I do relaxation training, I'm active and they're surrendering. Yeah. They may be breathing and working on identifying areas of stress and discomfort and trying to release it. So in that sense, they're still active. They just look very passive.
So the reason I say all this, by the way, is all of this and getting ready for today's show. And I'm remembering back to our conversation, the episode we did with James Wanless a couple of years ago. I don't know if you remember at the very end, he and I were talking about some philosophical concepts, including this, including the term opportunistic. And then we turned to animals and pets, which will lead into another session we're going to be doing.
Yeah.
But it's like my dog can't do nothing. That's their job, right? Their job is to do nothing. So in their off days, they can't do nothing. What do? And I say that as a joke, because if you watch animals, they do nothing. Look at how peaceful they are at times, right? They just, they're not out. If they're sheep herding, that's one thing. If they, you know, you've trained them to do tricks, that's another.
Sometimes they're just passively listening, like sitting there.
Moment to moment, they're just doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. So cute. I told you I want to come back as a dog, right? Like if reincarnation, exists and I get to choose, I want to come back as like a domesticated animal of somebody who loves pets. I just want to do that. It's not enlightenment. I don't want, I don't want to be the Buddha under the Bodhi tree. I want to be a dog in America.
In America, right? Yeah. And so one of the techniques, another technique that those of you listening may want to try, is to simply sit down and instead of forcing yourself to do nothing, just simply use the mantra B-E. it is what it is. This is what I'm, you're not trying to control a feeling. You're not trying to suppress a feeling. You're not trying to deflect a feeling. It's just be with it. Be here, be now. And then to always, I just am a big believer in always bringing your attention back to your breath, to do nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? You're going to breathe, right? Your heart does its thing on its own. Your breath does its thing on its own. And here's the cool part. If you will simply concentrate on the exhale, you don't have to do anything. There's the key to today. You don't have to do anything to inhale. It happens on its own.
Body's amazing.
Right. And I think a lot of us have lost that mind-body connection. I really do.
Yeah, it does. And I like to this is a do intervention, but I like to teach my clients to be kind to your body and to talk to it and to love it, even if it's not perfect, if it has lumps and jiggles in places that you, and droops in places that you wish it didn't, be loving to it, because it is the thing that helps people know you're in the room. It's the thing that gets you from place to place. It's constantly working, giving hormones, digesting things, heart beating, lungs breathing when you don't pay attention to it. And then when you're having a do nothing day, stop and pay attention to it. Like, just breathe consciously, stretch, relax.
Yeah. So I'm going to kind of leave today's session with the concept, if the Dutch are some of the happiest people in the world, if you look at the studies, and they're practicing Nixon, I think it's worth a shot to emulate the same concept.
I totally agree with you. And I have because you and I balance each other out, I have a quote to also challenge people in honor of Martin Luther King. It's a quote from him. And I'll leave you with this. This quote can be seen on one of the rocks on the Martin Luther King Memorial in Kennethon Park in Los Angeles. Beautiful, beautiful memorial if you've never been there. And it says, "There comes a time when silence is betrayal." The opposite of doing nothing is speaking up, when silence is betrayal.
Okay. All right.
Full circle.
Next week. Right, full circle. Next week, we are going to talk about the Barbie movie.
Yeah.
And Michelle's going to talk to you about how there are some analogies with the movie and life.
Yes. I'm excited.
All right. Until then, thank you all for listening. Please remember to like, share, subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. It's how we grow and how we get our metrics, folks. So please share this with your friends. Have them like it. Don't passively listen to us. Like the damn thing.
And share.
And share. And until next week, be well. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've reached the end of another episode of Keeping Your Together in a Stressed World with Michelle Post and Scott Grossberg. If you like our show, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate our broadcast, and leave a review. The podcast is for general information only and not intended to be legal or mental health advice, nor the formation of a lawyer-client, nor therapist-patient relationship. Stay tuned for our next episode, and thank you for listening.